Thank you, Liz. Great to see all of you here, and especially I'm honored to have both presidential candidates in here. New comedy. And, so I want to tell you today about symmetry protected topological faces and understand that the people coming from all different programs sitting in the audience, so I'll just try to break it down and tell you what these words mean, okay, and why they're excited to people in the TOPOQUANT program or synthetic quantum matter program. So so please interrupt me at any point if you think I'm going too fast or I'm saying a language that you don't understand. Sometimes it can be Chinese. And for those of you who in the audience who already know too much, please enjoy your lunch or correct anything I say that is so. Okay. So these are four words, but I'm going to start with the last one. Okay. So symmetry protected topological faces is a bunch of faces, and that's what condensed matter theory is centered on. Condensed matter theorists or condensed matter physicists want to know what kind of faces are there in these many body quantum mechanical systems. And well, we are familiar with many of the faces, like if we have water, it can be a solid, a liquid, or a gas. And we say that something is a phase is supposed to characterize a class of systems that have very similar properties. Okay, like if they're solid, then they may be at different temperature or pressure, but they all have this crystal structure that forms the solid. Of course, this is a very vague way of saying what is a phase, and I'll try to be more concrete when we go to the quantum regime. Okay, but first of all, I want to say that this is the central concept here is a phase, and if we want to go from one phase to another phase, like phase A to phase B, we need to go through a phase transition. So we already know a lot about phases and phase transitions in condensed matter, and a big theme in discussing phases and phase transitions is symmetry. So that's the other word here, symmetry, okay? And symmetry usually dictates what kind of phases we can have and how the phase transition happens. And at phase transition, there's something strange happen, usually some kind of singularity or discontinuity. It can be the energy in the system, it can be the specific heat, the magnetization, and etc. Okay, so whenever such things happen, we usually say that there's a phase transition going on in the system. And quantum systems are more interesting because they can have phase transitions at zero temperature. So suppose that we can cool the system down to zero temperature, where there's no thermal fluctuation. Quantum system can still exist in different phases. And the prototypical example that is usually taught in condensed matter class is the so-called transverse field Ising model. This problem is usually formulated as a Hamiltonian governing the dynamics of the system, but of course, as we are living at zero temperature, all we care about the Hamiltonian is the ground state, and maybe some low-lying acceleration on top of that. So let's write down the Hamiltonian like that. The system is composed of a bunch of Stefan halves, and it can either point up or point down, and there's a two-level. And the Hamiltonian is a coupling between sigma z and sigma z. Let's imagine that this is, say, on a two-dimensional lattice. and the coupling is between all nearest neighbor pairs. And the second term we can have in the Hamiltonian, which can drive from one place to another, is so-called a transverse field. This is in the x direction, and that's the transverse direction to the basis where we have defined the Ising coupling. So this model is important because it's very simple. Okay, there are two very simple limits where we can find exact solutions to the ground state and actually all the excitation spectrum of this model. It's the two limits where J equal to zero, and then J equal to infinity. At J equal to zero, we only have the first term. And this is simply saying that we want all the things to point in the same direction. So let's say we live on this two-dimensional lattice, then all of those things be in the same direction as their neighbors in order to minimize energy. So this is like either all the things pointing up or all the things pointing down. In the other limit, we have only the transverse field, which is pointing in the x direction. And the ground state will be very simple because the Hamiltonian is a bunch of one-body term acting on each spin individually and telling the spin to point in the x direction because there's a very strong magnetic field in that direction. And the spins will just follow the direction of the magnetic field. So they will just be like that. And that's just one ground state. So these are very simple Hamiltonians, and they have very simple solutions for the ground state. But as you can see, there's a sharp difference between these two cases. In one case, there are two ground states. And in the other case, there's just one. So these two are sharply distinguished from each other because the system has a symmetry, a global symmetry, that tells you that this case is definitely different from this case, and that's a Z2 symmetry which flips all the spins. So if we apply a sigma x operator to all the spins, we can flip spin up to spin down and spin down to spin up. And you can check that this operation doesn't change the Hamiltonian at all. So the Hamiltonian has a Z2 symmetry and is invariant under this action. But however, if we look at individual ground states, that's not the case here. This ground state will be mapped to this one, and this ground state will be mapped to that one. So the two ground states exchange under this symmetry action. But in this case, the ground state is already pointing in the x direction. So if we apply a sigma x operator, it doesn't change the ground state at all. Therefore, under this constraint of symmetry, these two sets of ground states are very different from each other. And this is called the ground state in this case is said to spontaneously break the symmetry, while the ground state in this case does not. Becomes, what if we move away from these simple, exactly solvable points to a finite J, and what might happen in the middle? And you can imagine that if we slightly tune J to be a little bigger than zero and drag it along the real axis, then the system pretty much stays very close to this exactly solvable point where there are two degenerate ground states. The two states might get deformed a little bit, and the spins might get mixed a little bit, but still, these twofold degeneracy will always be there, and each of them will be mapped into another one by the global symmetry operation. On the other hand, if we start from the point where J is equal to plus infinity and lower the magnetic field towards zero, then the system stays in this phase for a while, where the ground state is not degenerate, and there's a single ground state which is invariant under this global symmetry action. So on this axis of J, we can start from either the pure symmetry breaking point or the pure symmetric point and have a stable phase as we vary the value of J. But when they meet, when they see each other in the middle, there's some singularity going on, and there's a discontinuity in the ground state of the system, either in terms of energy or in terms of correlation function. We'll see something singular happen at this point, and we have a phase transition from a symmetric phase to a symmetry breaking phase, or vice versa. So this simple example, while it's very simple, it illustrates the basic principles for a large part of the phase diagram. That when we want to talk about phases, first of all, we look at what kind of symmetry the system has. And in this case, it's a Z2 symmetry. But of course, in other cases, it can be more complicated symmetries, like a U1 symmetry of phases, of a phase that can rotate in a plane, or an SO3 phase that of a vector that can rotate in the whole space. And in each case, we can ask, how does the ground state break the symmetry? If the ground state doesn't break the symmetry, then it's a symmetric phase. If the ground state breaks the symmetry, then it's a symmetry breaking phase. But there are different ways that the symmetry can be broken, such that only a subgroup of the symmetry is preserved by individual ground states at zero temperature. And in that case, we will have more than one symmetry breaking phase. We have one symmetric phase, but we can have different symmetry breaking phase. So the phase diagram, if I just draw a cartoon picture of it, will be like, this is symmetric phase, and then we have symmetry breaking phase 1, symmetry breaking phase 2, symmetry breaking phase 3. And then we can talk about phase transitions, and there are a lot of stories going on in between them. Okay, so this has been the story for a long time, until it was realized that this is not the full story. That we can have two systems with the same symmetry, and the ground state doesn't break the symmetry. So we're still staying at zero temperature, and we're thinking about ground state. In both cases, the ground state doesn't break the symmetry. But yet, these two phases, they cannot be connected smoothly. There has to be some singularity going on, indicating that these two are different phases. And also, there can be sharp physical consequences of the fact that these two systems are in different phases. And there are physical measurable quantities that can tell us that that these two are different phases, even though there's no symmetry breaking going on. So let me give you an example. So consider a system composed of atoms sitting in a one-dimensional chain. Just imagine that we have a bunch of atoms, and each atom has a valence orbital which contains two electrons. Okay, the two electrons sitting in the highest orbital of the atom, and they don't move. So we don't want the electrons are pretty much confined to the atom, then the function just sits here, and they don't move around. But still, each of the electrons has a spin, which can point either up or down. And the spin degrees of freedom of each electron can interact with the spin degree of freedom of another electron. Well, the simplest way that they can interact and without breaking the symmetry, the spin rotation symmetry, is for the spins of electrons at the same lattice site to form a singlet, right? That's usually what happens in an atom where we have Hund's rule that the electrons work. We have the electrons in the same orbital prefer to be anti-aligned and form singlets with each other. So in this toy model, we can just simply write down the Hamiltonian where the spin of the left electron on the ice lattice site has this interaction with the right electron on the same lattice site. And if we have a plus sign in front of it, this is saying that we prefer to have the two electron spin pointing in opposite directions. And quantum mechanically, then the two spins will try to form a singlet state like that. So it's up down minus down up. So they minimize energy by being in a singlet state. And if we draw it pictorically, it would just be the electrons pairing like that. Okay, so this is very simple. And the system has spin rotation symmetry because the interaction energy doesn't care if we rotate the electron, the spin of the electron at the same time, right? It only cares about the relative angle of the two spins. And if we rotate the spins all together, the energy doesn't change. So the system has spin rotation symmetry. And the ground state is a bunch of singlets. And singlet is something that doesn't change under rotation symmetry. So if we apply global spin rotation symmetry, the whole wave function remains invariant, and nothing changes. And this is the unique ground state, non-degenerate ground state of this simple Hamiltonian. But then we can imagine that something weird happens. We can still have two electrons per lattice site. But for some weird reason, the electrons don't want to interact with the one at the same lattice site. They want to interact with one at another lattice site, like that. So the Hamiltonian would simply be the spin of the right electron at lattice site I interacting with the spin of the left electron at lattice site I plus 1. Okay. So they just interact in this alternating fashion. And of these Hamiltonian terms, they totally decouple. It's a pair interaction. And the ground state is simply to form a singlet between all the spins that interact. So the story is pretty much the same as in the previous case. If we forget about that, we actually have two electrons per lattice site. If we just think about a bunch of electrons sitting on one-dimensional chain, it's almost the same story, right? Now we have spin rotation symmetry in the Hamiltonian, and the ground state is unique, and it doesn't break the spin rotation symmetry. But however, these two ground states, these two Hamiltonians, they're actually in a different phase with spin rotation symmetry. And if we want to connect them by changing the Hamiltonian, tuning some parameters, adding some terms to the Hamiltonian, tuning the parameters, and make one Hamiltonian go to the other, we necessarily run into some singularity in the middle. So the simplest way we can try to tune this Hamiltonian to this Hamiltonian is to put both terms there and tune their weight, right? So we can try to do that. We can write down a Hamiltonian, which has a J1 coupling for all the on-site pairs. And the J2 coupling for all the inter-site pairs. So this is the limit where J1 is equal to infinity. This is the limit where J2 is equal to infinity. But if we don't put them to infinity and we vary the ratio between them, Now, the system changes along the way, but at J1 equal to J2, this is the way the Heisenberg chain of spin 1/2 degrees of freedom, and the system becomes gapless. It becomes critical. There's a long-range correlation, there's vanishing energy gap above the ground state, and a lot of weird things going on. So this is telling us, well, that there's a strong hint that these two are different phases. But another way to see it, without trying to find a critical point between them, is to see if we're deep in each of the phase. Are there things that can tell us, by just measuring the system in the phase, are there physical signatures that can tell us that these two are definitely different? Well, there is. And that is when we look at the edge of the system. So if we have a one-dimensional ring of both systems, it looks like they're pretty much the same, right? They can be one can be obtained from the other by shifting half a lattice site, by shifting this left one to the right one and right one to the next left one. Of course, this is not something that we are allowed to do. This is something highly non-trivial. But on the other hand, if we want to really see the difference between the two systems, one thing we can do is to cut the system open, cut the ring open into a chain. And when we do that, of course, we can only cut between atoms. We're not allowed to cut an atom in half. We can just take an atom, one atom and another, and put them in a chain. But in this case, because the electrons on the same atom, they always form singlets, then even if we cut them open, it's still a bunch of singlets, the ground state. Right? So the ground state doesn't break the symmetry, and it's non-degenerate and everything very well. But in this case, because the electrons, they pair between nearest neighbor sites, when we cut the chain open, there's one electron here and one electron here that's not coupled to anything. And they're supposed to couple to each other when we put the chain into a ring. But however, if we pull them apart and separate them by a large distance in an open chain, then they're not allowed to talk to each other. If we assume that all the interaction in the system is local, as is the case that we always consider when we define phases and so forth, then these two spins, they don't talk to each other. And what happens when they don't talk to each other is that they become degenerate edge states in the ground subspace, because there's a twofold degeneracy here and twofold degeneracy here. And as long as we don't break the symmetry, we don't break the spin rotation symmetry, then these two energy levels, they have the same energy. And also all the states in the two-dimensional Hilbert space have the same energy. So this is saying that if we put a system on a one-dimensional chain and ask what is the ground state degeneracy, the ground state will have a four-fold degeneracy in this case, and a one-fold degeneracy in that case. Okay, so this is a sharp signature distinguishing these two phases, even though they have the symmetry. Ground state doesn't break the symmetry, but still, if we put a system on a manifold with edge, with boundary, then we would be able to see that there's something going on in this case. Well, there's nothing going on in that case. So this is a very simple example. But however, when this was first proposed, actually it was realized by Duncan Hodel, who won the Nobel Prize for this year. One of the work mentioned for this Nobel Prize is exactly of this kind. And what Duncan was considering is a bunch of spin ones. So let me draw the spin one with big blue circle. So these are spin 1s. And spin 1 have three energy levels, which is 1, 0, minus 1. Right? So it's different from the spin 1/2. And the question Duncan was asking is, what happens in a spin 1 chain if they interact through this the same anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg interaction as in the spin 1/2 case, but with equal weight for the coupling across all the nearest neighbors. So this Hamiltonian has very similar form to the one over there, but the difference is that, first of all, this is a 3x3 matrix, a set of 3x3 matrix for the spin 1. And secondly, we have equal weight coupling between all the nearest neighbor pairs, like that. So it is known that for spin 1/2 chain, if we have this kind of coupling, it's going to be gapless. So most people just assume that for spin 1, probably it's the same, that this should be gapless, and there's some low energy excitation going on. But Duncan proposed that, according to some field theory calculation, that this actually should be gapped. And also the ground state should not break the symmetry. And this is very surprising because it's hard to imagine that a spin 1 chain would actually be very much different from a spin 1/2 chain. And it remained a conjecture for a while because numerical calculation is very hard to confirm whether this Hamiltonian is actually gapped or gapless. But on hindsight, if we think about the problem, this one has a very strong resemblance to the case we talk about here. If we think of the spin 1 as composed of two spin 1/2s, just imagine that the spin 1 comes from combining two spin 1/2 and taking just the symmetric subspace of the two spin 1/2. So we throw away the fourth dimension where the two spin 1/2 form a singlet and just keep the three dimension where they're symmetric and form a spin 1 out of them. This kind of anti-ferromagnetic coupling between two spin 1s, and once we decouple them to two spin 1/2s, is very similar. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar to the case where we have alternating couplings between spin 1/2s on nearest neighbor lattice site. Of course, it's not exactly the same, and I think it's not totally settled that it's not rigorously settled mathematically that this Hamiltonian is in the same phase as the other one, but there's strong evidence for that. But of course, we can just take it for the case, take it to be true, and imagine that this Hamiltonian can be reinterpreted as that, by decomposing a single spin 1 as two spin 1/2s, and by considering the anti-ferromagnetic coupling between the spin 1s as the coupling between pairs of spin 1/2s on neighboring sites. And then everything becomes very clear, right? That this Hamiltonian actually should have a gap ground state. And also, the ground state doesn't break the symmetry because everything is singlet. And then if we put a chain on put a system on an open chain, then there's some edge degeneracy here. And it's twofold per each end. So the total, we have a fourfold degeneracy. Okay, no objections so far. Great. Right. So this is just the simplest example of what we want to call a symmetry protected topological phase. So let me try to be more concrete and give a more formal definition of what is a symmetry protected topological phase. So first of all, we're considering local Hamiltonians living in, yes.
So I do have a question. I think you made this argument very nicely, and I've seen it before, and I think I learned new things from what you said. But if we think about a singlet, then there's no freedom for one of those spins in the singlet to be correlated with a third spin, right?
Yes.
So how do we separate out the spin one? Because the spin one, the two spin a halves have to be pointing in the same direction, right?
Yes. Okay, that's a good question. So you're saying because the two spins have to be pointing in the same direction, how can we make sure that these two are in a singlet, they're maximally entangled? It seems there's no way for the spins to be correlated between these two. So what we actually do is to first literally take the chain to be composed of spin 1/2. So there's a four-dimensional Hilbert space per side. And we make these spin 1 singlets. And then the wave function will be like a bunch of singlets. And then we tensor them together. And then what we do is to apply a projection. Project two spin one halves down to a spin one on each lattice side, just enforcing this correlation of spins on each lattice side after they have formed a singlet. Of course, after this projection, this perfect entanglement will break down. If we actually calculate the entanglement between two spin one halves, they're not as perfect as before. But this keeps the property that the system is still spin rotation invariant. Right, everything's spin rotation invariant. This is singlet. This is some projection. And secondly, the ground state still has short range correlation. The projection doesn't break the short range correlation condition.
But related to that, when your icing example, you have these two states which are degenerate. Okay, you also can organize some indifference of the state, and they would be symmetric states.
Yes.
So in this sense, in quantum mechanics, you always can organize a superposition which has a plus or minus symmetry, right?
Yes.
So in this sense, it's additional. Fixing, say, total angular momentum, for example, but it's additional condition when you're choosing those states and saying that it's a problem, right?
Yes, exactly. So this is a great point that. We're talking about symmetry breaking, but this picture of symmetry breaking is very much a classical one that we're thinking of one configuration versus another configuration. But of course, quantum mechanically, we can just take superpositions between these two configurations and make them symmetric, right? But of course, and then in order to say what symmetry breaking means in a quantum mechanical system, we need to be more careful. We cannot just say that the ground state breaks the symmetry, because actually if you take a finite system, if you take a finite system size and find the ground state will actually always be symmetric. It might have a quantum number 1 or minus 1, but they won't break the symmetry. And of course, the situation that we're interested in is always in a thermodynamic limit, which is not always achievable in a calculation. But what we imagine to happen is that once we take the thermodynamic limit, there will be a twofold ground state degeneracy. And the ground state degeneracy will go exponentially small as the system size. And another way to define symmetry breaking for a quantum mechanical system is to say, I don't want to look at cat states like that. I don't want to look at fixed superpositions of configurations. I want to only look at states with short-range correlation. And the short-range correlation means I take a connected correlator like that. That is, we only want to consider states for which this one will go down with the distance between operator 1 and 2. So this configuration satisfies this condition because every spin is in product state. And this configuration satisfies this condition, but the superposition of the two does not satisfy the condition anymore. You can just take the sigma z operator, and you see that the correlator actually doesn't decay. So when we want to talk about symmetry breaking in quantum mechanical system, we need to be very specific. Now we want to look at short-range correlated ground states at the thermodynamic limit, infinite system size, and see if they break the symmetry or not. And so when we talk about symmetry potential topological phase, we want to rule that out. We want all the short-range correlated ground states to be symmetric, to be invariant under symmetry. So let me go back to the definition. The definition would be, first of all, we want to consider local interacting model. In n dimension, so local just means we have a degrees of freedom and it has a finite range such that it only interacts with other degrees of freedom in this range. It's not the interaction is not going very far away. But of course, I don't want to be too strict about how the interaction decays and all that. But let's just say we have some definition of locality, and we want the Hamiltonian to be local. And secondly, we're interested in systems with a global symmetry. So here, global symmetry means that I apply the operation to the whole system at the same time. So if we... Yes, exactly. So in every degree of freedom in the system. If we do spin rotation, we rotate at the same time. If we do, let's say, time reversal, we do it to all the degrees of freedom at once. So we're not thinking about like gauge symmetry or local symmetry or anything like that. And third condition is that we want a gapped ground state. So the gapped ground state is the situation where phase and phase transitions can be most sharply defined. We can say that a system stays within one phase if it stays gapped all the time, right? At zero temperature. And if it goes through a phase transition, then the gap closes and then reopens on the other side. And of course, on the other side, the degeneracy of the ground state might change or not. But the crucial thing is that there's a critical point in between where the gap closed at thermodynamic limit.
So when you say you have a gap ground state, you can have a degenerate gap ground state.
That's exactly. So we would consider a system. OK, I need to be more specific. Gap ground states are closed manifold. I don't want boundary. Boundary always makes things more complicated. So I want gap ground states. If it's 1D, I want it on a ring. If it's 2D, I want it on a sphere or on a torus, and so on. Okay, I don't want to consider boundaries.
Actually, there could be a first order transition where the gap is not closed, right? So for the VQ SPD, for example.
Okay. Well, there's level crossing or something.
Yeah, but
it can't be gapped all the time.
Anyway, it's not gapped,
So we want to consider a gap system on a closed manifold. So there's some finite degeneracy and there's a finite energy difference between all the low energy states, all the ground states, and the first excited state. And the energy and the gap stays finite.
I think what he meant local interacting model n dimension, she meant n dimensional lattice model. And she might
make the one that's like a sphere of a torus, then that's a finite dimensional in the system.
Yes.
So it's a finite dimensional system.
Why is finite dimensional
system? Well, it's a compact manifold in the lattice.
But they'll take the size of the compact manifold to infinity, so yeah. Then we reach the thermodynamic.
Exactly, which is otherwise known as a continuum.
Yeah.
You can think of electrons moving in the continuum like fingers.
It's going into the infrared, not the ultraviolet.
Yeah, the compact line for a little bit, infinite number of stars.
Yeah. I think in that sense, it's whether you take a lattice or take the system size to infinity or shrink the lattice constant and make it smaller, smaller.
No, but the lattice is important in these phases because you have these bonds, single bonds between two lattice sites. It's hard to define that in the strictly in the continuum.
N equal to 10.
Yeah. Well, as long as you have edge states,
or at define least, the model.
At least in these, all these
you don't have to know how it was defined.
Right, at least in these, all these quantum Hall states, we don't talk about lattice or anything. It's electrons moving. Well, there's a magnetic lens for sure, but. So there might be some fundamental lens in the problem that defines the ultraviolet cutoff. Okay, so this is just general setup. We want interacting model with global symmetry and they have a gap ground state. But then we want to say, when do we call a phase a symmetry protected topological phase? First of all, we want the ground state to not break the symmetry. No spontaneous symmetry breaking at zero temperature. So, of course, that's defined by looking at all the short range correlated states and see if they violate the global symmetry, if they map into each other by the global symmetry. So this is the first condition. And there's a notion that when this happens, there can be a trivial way to satisfy the condition that there's no spontaneous symmetry breaking by just having the degrees of freedom on a single lattice site to form a singlet. In SO3 case, it's a singlet. In the Z2 case, it's just a simple spins pointing in the x direction. That is, all the states on each lattice site is already invariant under the global symmetry transformation. Let me keep writing here. So there's a sense that we have a trivial symmetric phase where the wave function is just a tensor product of product states on each lattice site. And on each lattice site, the wave function is already invariant under the global symmetry. So this is like the first case here or this case here. But it's not always true that there can be symmetric phases where the ground state cannot be connected, cannot be in a product form. Or you might object saying that in the Ising case, the ground state is in product form only when j is equal to infinity. Right? At any finite j, at any finite strength of this Ising coupling, the ground state is definitely not going to be in a product state. But the key point is that there is one point in the phase diagram such that the ground state can break down into product state. But however, when we have a non-trivial SPT order, symmetry protected topological order, we want it to be that there's no point in the whole phase where the ground state can be a product state.
So what is the point for the
Haldane model? Sorry? Yes, that's exactly what's happening here in the Haldane model, that in the whole face, including this model, the ground state cannot be a product state.
Of so course, the Haldane model doesn't have phi. There is no trivial symmetric phase. So are you making that a requirement?
Okay, so if we stick with spin 1 degrees of freedom, there are no, there are probably,
I think David is asking that, so what is that a stable fixed point wave function for the Haldane phase? I think that's the AKLT, that's called AKLT state. it's a zero correlation state, which means under RGE, it cannot grow anymore. There's a specific Hamiltonian for that, it's slightly different from this one.
But at this point, isn't the AKLT state, can be the ground state is still exactly the degenerate?
Yes, but the Hamiltonian is different from that one, right? Hamiltonian is different from that one.
Correct, but it's in the same place.
So David was asking about, what is that, that point, right, in the phase diagram, where everything flows to? So that's the
right, so the AKLT model is this one, where the wave function is a bunch of singlets, and then we do a projection down to spin 1. This one still has a finite correlation length. It is, if we embed this spin 1 into the Hilbert space of 2 spin 1 half, and literally have the wave function as a bunch of singlets, and that wave function has a zero correlation length, and that will be the fixed point of this phase diagram. So it will be a product state, but however, the structure of the product state is mismatched with the lattice structure. So in a trivial SPT phase, we have a point in the phase diagram where the ground state is a product state, but in a non-trivial phase diagram, in a non-trivial SPT phase, we have all the points in the phase diagram, the ground state cannot be in a product form. This is on a closed manifold. And then on open manifold, then things become very different for these two cases. If we have a ground state, which is a bunch of product state on each lattice side, then we cut the system open. Not much happens, right? It's just still we have a product state over all the lattice side. But however, if as in the AKLT, as in the Haldane phase case, we have non-trivial entanglement among all the lattice side, like that. Then when we cut it open, then we cut through this entanglement structure. Because the entanglement structure is mismatched with lattice structure, so we cut it through, cut through the entanglement structure, and we're left with a bunch of degrees of freedom on the edge. And that what gives the edge states in SP phase.
Cutting is a physical operation. Uh-huh. And it depends on the dynamics of the system.
Yes.
So just because you define the system on the lattice doesn't mean that you're allowed to cut on the lattice side.
So what I mean by cutting is just to take these bunch of degrees of freedom, put all the couplings that stays within the boundary, but remove all the interaction terms that's outside of the boundary.
But you can actually do that.
Because it's defined in the lattice, you can cut it. If it was defined in the continuum, it's a little delicate to know what it means to cut it. Right? That's the advantage of actually defining it on the lattice.
By the lattice, you mean you're really assuming there's a physical lattice.
Yeah. To define the model. Maybe you don't see it.
The model ends up with dynamics, but the degrees of freedom are not sort of product states on the lattice, but on a different lattice.
Yeah, it depends on.
I don't like the product state form.
What?
See, I don't know why you need to say anything about a product state.
What? Sorry?
Why do you need to say? Why do you need to say that the non-trivial SVT has a product form, or does not have a product form?
The trivial one.
Is that necessary?
Yes. If it's in product form, then it's. Sorry,
if it is in product form, but does it? I don't know. Is it?
I guess what he's asking is the point of this definition is what? prove some theorem.
The point is just to say what we want. As a
Can you say a product is always in, you take it in real space? Like, let's say it was a product in momentum space.
Always in real space. Always on lattice.
It must be a product. It must be a product of a Hilbert state on every side. It must be a product of state on every side. Or union cell.
Yes, we want
so that AKLT is not a product of state on every cell. It's on a linked variable. That's a difference.
Yes, exactly.
And also, so if I can comment, I think to have address David's question. So actually, cutting is actually a very vague term. But more precise way of defining cutting is that we terminate the Hilbert space at some point and design a edge Hamiltonian. Before and add another term to the edge, design edge Hamiltonian. But actually, so that means cutting. But so cutting means a bunch of edge Hamiltonian, but they are equivalent in the sense that they do not change the boundary physics a lot. You know, they correlate, so no matter what kind of local edge Hamiltonian we design, they will give you almost the same physics. So there's a universality there. So cutting means that a huge class of different edge Hamiltonian you add to the Hamiltonian.
So for this example, number two here, that's in a non-trivial SPT phase? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I will say this is trivial. This is non-trivial. Right, so you might say that this wave function is still a product form, but it's not product on each lattice side. And when you cut it, you break something. And we have to assume that there are certain places we're not allowed to cut. That, for example, we don't want to cut through the middle of the an atom. We don't want to do that. We don't want to split an atom to two. Basically, or a more rigorous way to say that is that we want the degrees of freedom for each lattice site to be some well-defined representation of the symmetry. In this case, it's spin rotation, and we want the degrees of freedom to be integer spins. So we can't just cut like that. Okay. So these are definitions about what happens when we put things on a closed manifold. But then once we put it on an open manifold, there will be interesting consequence, physical consequence of this mismatch between entanglement pattern and lattice pattern. And that's when the edge states happens. So on open manifold, there will be edge states. And in this case, in the Haldane chain case, it's just some degeneracy at each end of the chain. Okay, and actually there's another case where edge states has been discussed a lot in the condensed matter community over the past 10 years or so. That's the topological insulator. So I'll try to briefly mention what topological insulator is and why that is also considered a symmetry protected topological phase. So topological insulator is a piece of electronic material. It can be two-dimensional, three-dimensional. And as the name suggests, it is an insulator. Okay. So we all know what an insulator does. An insulator, you put some voltage on it, and it doesn't conduct current. But topological insulator is very strange in that sense that if you put a voltage over two points, which are inside the bulk of the material, then there's no current. But however, if you put a voltage connecting two points on the boundary, there will be current. So it's conducting on the surface. It's not conducting in a bulk, but conducting on the surface. Or you might say that this is totally trivial. I can just put some metal on the surface of an insulator and then becomes conducting on the surface. But this is like cheating. because you can just scratch the surface and get rid of the metal layer and expose the real intrinsic insulating bulk, and it becomes an insulator again. But what happens with topological insulator is that no matter how you scratch, if the experimentalists allow you to do that, no matter how much you scratch the surface, there's no way that you can get rid of the surface state and really expose the insulating layer, as long as time inversal symmetry is preserved. So what happens in a two-dimensional topological insulator is that there is some the band structure of electrons has some topology built in such that they're conducting modes along the edge, and the modes go around the edge like that. So there's electrons moving to the left and electrons moving to the right, but they carry different spins. In the simplest case, you can imagine that one of them carries spin up, and one of them carry spin down. Usually when we have counterpropagating electrons, what we can do is to add some disorder or whatever and open up a gap, allow scattering from one branch of electron to another branch of electron. So this would be realized by scattering a left mover to a right mover and vice versa. But now the thing is that the right mover and left mover, they carry opposite spins. So when we do the scattering, we need to remember that one of them has spin up and the other has spin down. But because they have spins, then when they transform on the time inversal symmetry, there's something weird going on, meaning that spin up goes to spin down, but spin down goes to minus spin up. This is something strange about spin 1/2. That is, you do time reversal twice, you get back the spin, but you also get a minus sign in the wave function. And this implies that if we do time reversal symmetry on this term here, there will be a minus sign on the whole term, on the scattering term. And that's just saying that if we want to preserve time inversal symmetry, then we are not allowed to add this kind of scattering between the two edges. And that would protect the gapless edge flowing indefinitely. And that doesn't change no matter whether you scratch or you add some disorder or your lattice distortion. And nothing matters as long as you don't add a magnetic field or do something like that. Or induce superconductivity. Superconductivity is also bad. But as long as you don't break time reversal or charge conservation symmetry, then the edge state is always there. So in this sense, Haldane chain and topological insulator, they both belong to this class of symmetry-protected topological phase. Because first of all, the local interacting models with some global symmetry, the different symmetries. One is spin rotation, the other is charge conservation and time reversal. They have gap ground states. There are no gapless excitations. One is an insulator, the other is a gap spin chain. But, and also the ground state, if we put it on a closed manifold, there's no spontaneous symmetry break. But however, if we put a system on an open manifold, there's something going on. In the Haldane chain case, there's a spin 1/2 edge states, which leads to twofold degeneracy. In the topological insulator case, we have these gapless edge modes flowing around, contributing to the conductance on the edge. So these are the two most popular examples, the simplest examples of what we call the symmetry protected topological phase. And the big effort in the field is trying to understand what symmetry-protected topological phases there are. If I'm given a lattice model in any dimension, allow any kind of interaction, given a global symmetry, how many phases can I have? And if I find that there can be non-trivial phases, then what are their physical properties in terms of edge states, or in terms of some bulk response property to external gauge fields? And then finally, where these kind of things can be realized, whether it's an electronic material or it's some strong interacting forces.
So are there SPT phases without time reversal symmetry?
Oh yes, definitely. So this is with spin rotation symmetry, and we can have SPT phases with unitary, like Z2 or U1 symmetry. Yes, but most of the electronic examples there with time over source.
Thank you.
Is there a way to define the statements 5 and 6 sharply in a continuum, really? I mean, one idea of which you call yourself is the same you're trying to classify them by group cosmology. Right? So in that case, one, you know, can you say that, okay, in some abstract mathematical sense, if I give you a continuum theory, you can compute what the cosmology group is. Depending on which equivalence class it sits, it has a trivial or some trivial, and then you don't need any of that product state business.
Well, first of all, the group cohomology is on a discrete manifold, so I'm not sure how much that helps. Yeah, there has to be a way to define Hilbert space, local Hilbert space, and then cutting through them. So I'm not, I need to think about it, and I'm not exactly sure at this point.
Donald, any questions?
Great article.
She has no idea what you're talking about.
Situation, who I knew.